So lecture 20, October 30th, lecture notes, page 168. I hope you guys, anybody go downtown? Do you guys go downtown for the holiday, Halloween weekend at all? Anybody down there? Any good? Was it fun? So, yeah. So, yeah, I went out, saw a couple of weird people in restaurants dressed up. My Mad Hatter costume was much better than the guy I saw, I'm sorry. If you're interested in hearing from someone quite successful, Mark Lohr and his talk on entrepreneurship is available on the web, 5:30 to 6:15 on November 2nd. He's a serial entrepreneur, founder, chairman, and CEO of Wonder Group, a new owner, MBA owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, is the lead largest venture in Archer, an aerospace company, et cetera, et cetera. So he's obviously a serial entrepreneur. He's bought and made successful and sold a bunch of companies. So if you want to learn from somebody doing pretty well for himself, that website is available to you on November 2nd. Webbies, you too, you're on the web already, so you can just jump on. You see how that works. I mentioned the syllabus, the opportunity to help out researchers and help yourself periodically. So here comes research extra credit number one. Wednesday or so, Dr. Jewell will send you out an email invitation to do Marketing 25010 research extra credit number one. Jump online, do a survey, pay attention, because if you don't pay attention, you don't get the attention check questions right. You can't get credit just for doing click, 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 click. You actually have to be a good participant. And add 0.5% to your course grade. Why not? You too, Webbies. So here we are. I now dragged my calendar up. So we're in the last week of October. Is it almost November? Holy mackerel. And we see that mini test number 10 will cover today's lecture and last Wednesday's lecture. It will open on Tuesday. It will close on Sunday on its usual schedule. And then that's the last of the material for midterm 2. So midterm 2 will open on Monday the 6th at 8 a.m. and run out to Saturday. Write that down, Saturday. Saturday, Saturday, Saturday at 6 p.m. I know people are going to say, I thought it was Sunday. No, it's Saturday. So you have Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. It says 6 days ought to be enough to take the test, yeah? What else we got here? So we have mini test 9 closed. I don't know what it means that we dropped down to 86%. Was mini test 9 any harder than mini test 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1? But 86%. And 10 will open tomorrow and close Sunday, as mentioned. And then we get into midterm 2 next Monday. Enhanced learning extra credit number 6 in pack back number 6 closed last Wednesday. The average there stayed pretty steady. So there you've added 1.5% to your course grade on average. If you also do the extra credit, you've just added 2 percentage points to your final course grade. That begins to add up nicely, if you're at the margin at all. Then that'll close on Wednesday. So midterm 2, it looks just like midterm 1, except it's midterm 2. Opens at 8 a.m., closes at 6 p.m., closes on Saturday, covers the material from lectures, mini tests 6 to 10. That's lecture 11 to 20. Today is lecture 20, so it's going to end the material today. 50 questions, 80 minutes, randomly drawn, blah, blah, blah. You can't use any digital materials for the test. Did I ever mention that before? You can use Open Book, Open Notes. Any questions on midterm 2 that you've forgotten since we did midterm 1 that I can answer for you? All right. Code is needed, but you can avoid being asked for a code by rebooting your camera. Don't have anything else running. Use your picture ID. It should be up and running for you pretty quickly. All the same information from last time. You really should have a book. You really should have printed notes. You really can't talk to anybody else. Using the review tests can help you to study if you want to improve your grade. All the stuff from last time, nothing new. All right, so little comment about Nike, obviously still a well-known brand name. It's not like they're suffering yet, but they are lagging back a little bit and giving competition an edge up. Nike made a swift comeback earlier this month in the super shoe fight when marathon runner Kelvin Kiptum set a world record while wearing a new iteration of the company's Alpha Fly 3, but Nike is losing steam in other races. So here we're seeing brand partnerships between Kelvin and them. Competitors such as Hoka and On are gaining a foothold among runners and with people who are looking for something comfortable to wear to work or school. Adidas and New Balance are also making headway in the market for streetwear by bringing back old models in dozens of colorways, moves similar to those from Nike's own playbook. This is an area where you have intense competition, monopolistic competition, a bunch of folks fighting for market share. Nike said sales of footwear in North America, its largest market, fell 2% in the latest quarter. Higher prices for Nike shoes weren't enough to offset a 10% decline in sales volume, the first decline in more than a year. So here we see the relationship among price, demand, profitability, which we'll be coming to shortly in our discussion in marketing. Nike remains the world's largest seller of athletic footwear and apparel, generating $48.7 billion, don't feel too bad for them, in revenue the year ending in May. But still, Nike executives have said they're working to improve product marketing and assortments, thank you, products, yes, for consumers, and also drive more meaningful connection with everyday runners. So we're managing the brand, targeting those everyday runners. Some consumers and industry analysts say the pace of innovation coming from Nike is slowing. Its first Alpha Fly sneaker launched in 2020. Back then, they were perceived as groundbreaking, but they're also made for runners who are willing to spend more than $200 for their shoes, and not necessarily for people just looking for something comfortable to wear. So we see a bit about their market segments, their target marketing. Nike boss Donahoe said that last month that the company was giving priority to everyday runners looking for something new and reaching that consumer, whether at a Nike store or not. The company released the $80 Nike Interact Run last month and a more affordable performance shoe. So we see them developing a new product with a new price point for this target market. Moving further into the mass market is a shift from the company's reliance on limited edition products to drive sales. Younger shoppers want new and unique products in order to stand out, and Nike needs to move away from doing different colors of the same sneaker if it wants their attention. So understanding the consumer, what they value, and providing it to them, Nike could pick up the pace there a little bit. Anybody know Daya? Dale, one, two, okay, a couple folks. Do you like the product? Do you like the product? You both know it, but neither one likes it. Well, then, just skip these slides. So Daya is a leader in plant-based cheese category. It's trying to build awareness and boost sales with its largest campaign called Skeptics. Consumers, of course, don't buy products they aren't aware of. I guess they also don't buy products they don't like. I don't know about that part. But getting people to eat plant-based is hard because they often think that the taste won't be good. So we wanted to create an ad that would combat that apprehension, says John Kelly, VP of Consumer Marketing. So they feel they have to change consumers' attitudes about the brand, right? Veggie-based cheese, veggie-based, isn't going to taste good. No, no, don't say anything. So they gathered three different groups of, quote, pizza experts for a Q&A, preceded by a buffet of the brand's piping hot pizza slices. Everybody ate. Nobody complained. Yet the barbs flew as soon as an interview started the session asking about this sort of product. The goal was to get unknowing approval from pizza and cheese experts to show the bias head on. That's their campaign theme. Skeptics also revisits a well-worn trope in advertising, embracing negative reviews to show the brand's sense of humor, and then pulling a swap on the consumers and providing testimonials to bolster the product, a tactic they feel will help change attitudes. This is one of two ads. This one's targeting kids.
Okay, guys, who loves pizza? So you guys are pizza experts?
Yeah.
I love pizza. And the cheese,
What do you guys think about pizza made from plant?
No. It would taste disgusting.
Would you ever eat plant-based pizza?
No.
Do you think you guys could taste the difference?
Yeah, I can tell the difference.
I could definitely tell the difference.
100% plant-based, even if you're not. Daya.
which is also their new tagline, 100% plant-based, even if you're not. And it shows the kids really enjoying the pizza. So one group consisted of hardcore Green Bay Packers fans, the ones wearing foam blocks of cheddar as hats. They wouldn't consider showing up on game day with a plant-based cheese pizza as a snack. That party foul can result in unhappy townspeople wielding pitchforks, according to a focus group member who went medieval in his opinion of cheese alternatives. But moments earlier, unbeknownst to this hater, he'd been chowing down on the very object of his derision, and he even went back for seconds. So much for his discerning palate.
Would you guys all consider yourselves cheese experts?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. What about plant-based cheese?
No.
That's not cheese.
What would happen if you brought a plant-based pizza to a tailgate?
No, I don't like
it. I'd walk out.
Unhappy townspeople wanting pitchforks.
Real pizza needs real cheese.
Oh, good. I'm about to go get another piece of that pizza.
You go.
100% plant-based, even if you're not. Dea.
So, apparently these people were fooled, even though perhaps our discerning students were not. Plant-based cheese products made from soy, nuts, peas, and other ingredients still have only 5% household penetration and about only 1% of the dairy category, but tout 50% repeat buyers. Still in the introduction stage of the product life cycle, it may take a while to take off. Dea is sending the Skeptics campaign through digital, connected TV, and social media buys, in addition to an experiential pop-up recently at Two Boats, Boots Pizzeria in New York's West Village. So here's their media and promotion strategy. And so at least these people were fooled by it and thought it tasted pretty good. Did you try the pizza or just the loose cheese or something else? Years ago. How about you? Have you tried it recently? A year ago? Maybe it's gotten better. Ocean Spray. How many of you guys like use Ocean Spray? Not many. Ocean Spray unveils a digital sequel to last year's breakthrough holiday spider paste. Spray's 2022 holiday commercial last year was one of the creative highlights of the season, with its crew of listless dining dinner guests who sprang convulsively to life at the sight of the wiggly, jiggly Ocean Spray cranberry jelly. The spot performed very well last year, much more than I expected, said Manisha Davik, chief commercial officer at Ocean Spray. Our social media sentiment showed that it resonated positively with younger consumers, millennials and younger. It also reinforced how the power of cranberry can transform boring into fun, really, which continues to be our guiding creative approach today. The spot, which I'm going to show you in a second, boosted the whole product portfolio. Holy mackerel. Sales of its jellied cranberry sauce rose by 27%, and juice sales also spiked. That pretty well shows advertising can work. My click didn't work, though, and that's going to be less interesting because I was going to show you the one that started it all. What happened to my click? That's not the click I want. Well, rats. This always works better when it works, you know? Let me try it real quick, see if I can get to it. If not, you'll just have to trust me and we'll go to the next one, but let's try it real quick. Sorry about that. Usually we're pretty good. So, I am subscribed. Give me a break. Yes. I don't know my password. All right. So, I will describe the silly one from last time because apparently it's not going to work for me. So, what they had last time was a bunch of people sitting around a big table. It was very, very quiet. Somebody walks in with like three different piles of the jelly cranberry, and it's jiggling and jiggling and wiggling. They set it down on the table, and all of a sudden people at the table were jiggling, and pretty soon they're going back and forth like crazy. I thought it was silly, but apparently it worked really well for them. They liked that idea, and so this year the brand is following up that successful effort with more anatomically unlikely fun at a party, where the guests are similarly glum. But soon a woman appears, tiptoes over to the punch bowl, and delivers the branded cranberry Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice Solution, a dose of Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice cocktail. Soon everyone is most definitely feeling the effects. This one's going to work for me. So this plays off a little bit on the last one. What a party. I don't know if that's going to sell more cranberry juice, but they liked it. And so perhaps it'll be as effective as last year's commercial was. Making cranberry juice cocktail, the CJC, as the company calls it, the focus of the sequel made sense, as it's the flagship product and one that many consumers already associate with party environments. Nearly 40% of consumers are mixing cranberry juice with either vodka, seltzer, or with other juices. Since consumers already know that adding cranberry to your drink or punch turns the party from being boring to fun, showcasing the product through this creative lens not only makes sense from our brand's perspective, but will also be instantly recognizable to the end consumer. So what's called reminder advertising. The spot, which will run on linear and streaming TV, online video, and display banners, is just the beginning of Ocean Spray's holiday shenanigans. So this is a seasonal ad campaign. We don't see this back in May and June. The brand is also planning a team canned versus team homemade cranberry and jelly effort, a social campaign to get consumers to make their own punch in a bottle with 64-ounce CJC bottles, and a creator campaign on Pinterest featuring holiday mocktails. So we're getting consumers involved with this exciting brand. Anybody actually like Ocean Spray? A few. Okay. All right, on to lecture notes, page 168. We're in chapter 11, page 317 of the textbook, picking up with the first of the four P's of the marketing mix that we've been discussing, that's product. And we've been talking about branding strategies. We left off last time talking about middlemen's branding strategies and what approaches they might take. So we continue from there. I forget if we got to that slide or we didn't, but if you are a middleman with your own brand, what you hope to do is have your brand, you're pricing it less expensively than the national brand, and hopefully people come back to your store, Kroger's, for example, to build store loyalty, and you'll get better profit margins selling Kroger's than you will selling a Jolly Green Giant. And 60% of retailers say they plan to place more emphasis on private label brands for just those reasons. Does that look familiar, sort of, from where we left off? Now, if you're a manufacturer, how do you respond to this issue of your channel partners having their own brand? Well, one thing you could do is to cut the price of your national brand to be closer to the store brand. There goes some profits. Or, maybe better for you, use advertising and promotion to convince consumers that your brand is indeed superior. Do you want Jolly Green Giant beans or do you want Kroger's beans? Our beans are much meatier than their beans. Buy our beans. Prune your product lines back so you're not carrying as much expensive inventory and maybe moving away from what the retailer is carrying. This sets up what we call the battle of the brands on the store shelf. What are you going to buy? Are you going to buy the store brand? Are you going to buy the national brand? How expensive is that going to be? Both producers, manufacturers, and middlemen talk about doing things like, how do I brand within my product mix? One approach to that is to come up with a separate name for each product. So we know the brand name Comet, right? And we know the brand name Old Spice, right? Who's the owner? What manufacturer owns those two brands? Yeah? It is Procter & Gamble, but notice they don't make a big deal out of that. Sure, if you look on the bottle, you can see it. But it doesn't say Procter & Gamble, Old Spice. Procter & Gamble comment. What they've decided to do, because they're selling such a diverse set of products, aftershave and cleanser, they're going to not put their brand name on it. They're going to have a separate brand name for each product that doesn't say Procter & Gamble, yeah? Or what they might do is turn it around and say, man, we really want to be known for this thing. When you think car cleaning products, if you're into cars, one brand that might come to mind is Armor All. Does that sound familiar? Any car buffs here? But Armor All has Armor All upholstery cleaner, Armor All window cleaner, Armor All tire cleaner, Armor All body cleaner. It's all under the Armor All brand name. They want the products to be their brand to be associated with the products. So they use a family branding approach. Firestone tires and a variety of tires for Firestone. We might brand for market saturation, so we're going to have multiple brands out there. Whatever you go to buy, we want to have a brand there for you. So for example, if you want a laundry detergent, you can get Dreft, Daz, Cheer, Bold, Era, Tide, again, in this case, all Procter & Gamble products. But whether you want an up-end one, a soft, a dainty one, a strong one, we're going to have a brand for you. If you like cereal, Kellogg's pretty much has a cereal that you might like. So they have quite a lot of different brands out there. So they're branding for, it goes on. They're branding for, there's some more. They're branding for saturation, yeah? So that's their approach. Co-branding is another approach you might take, or dual branding. Here what we're going to do is pick up a couple partnerships where consumers really like both brand names, and we'll put them together on a single product. For example, we all know Betty Crocker, yeah? We all know Hershey's, yeah? How about if we combine the two into Betty Crocker Hershey's Super Moist Milk Chocolate Cake? Yummy. Now, there are a little bit of dangers involved here. Some brands seem to overdo it. They partner with everybody on everything. I think Polo might be one of those that does it. You can get Polo socks, Polo shirts, Polo tennis shoes, not tennis shoes, but Polo underwear, Polo towels, Polo sheets. Maybe you're overdoing it. I don't know. There's a risk to both brands if the product fails. So if there's something wrong with production, if there's some issue, both brands take a hit. So you have to be aware of that if you're going to partner up with some other brand. So you want to be careful about all of that. When done right, of course, branding builds value to the organization. It builds brand equity. Brand equity is the value that a brand name adds to the product over what the value to the product would be without the brand name. So we spend a lot of money on branding. We're hoping it creates value for the organization, for the company. What do people pay for a generic bottle of water? What do they pay for Dasani or Aquafina? Here I pick an exaggerated example to make the point. So over here we have Great Value Water, which is not a big brand name. Great Value Water, now admittedly I'm showing it to you there in the 24 case, is about 14 cents a bottle. What do you guys pay for a Dasani or Aquafina per bottle? Or you don't pay at all? I think out here in the machine it's like $1.75. Here it's listed as $1.89. Why so much difference between the more or less generic one? Because people want that brand name. It's, you know, it gives me the quality I want. It's worth it to me to spend money on the brand name. Yeah? And amusingly, I do make fun of my wife sometimes. Dear, I'm not kidding. Never mind. So she actually has a bottled water preference. I forget which one it is, and I should know. Between the two of those, she doesn't like the taste of one of the two. What? It's water. But she has a preference for one of the two. Brand equity at Coke, the last time I ran the numbers, over what a generic cola would be, about $88 billion. So they add some value to what they're doing by branding. Why does branding bring such value, such equity to the organization? Well, first of all, it does provide a reason to buy. People go for the brand, many people go for the brand name. It's a barrier to competition. If you have a really strong brand name out there in your product category, it does dissuade others from coming in and trying to come up with a generic tea, Lipton being my example. You want to go against Lipton, good luck with that. It facilitates international expansion. We saw what Starbucks did with its logo, peeled off all of the American words, just made it an image. Now you don't have to worry about it internationally. People know what it is, but that's because you have such a strong brand. It helps a product to survive in a crisis. Tylenol was a well-known brand. 50 years ago, whatever it was, somebody put a bunch of poison pills into Tylenol. It was killing people. They immediately took all the product off the shelf. They didn't mess around. Good for them. Helped invent the safety cap. But meanwhile, many companies could have gone out of business had their product been poisoning people, even though it wasn't their fault. Tylenol stuck in there in part because of such a strong brand name. Brand equity does have limits, though. How far can you push that brand equity? How far can you push that brand value? When we think of Campbell's, among other things, we think of soup. Campbell's soup, yeah? Campbell's tomato soup. Let's expand our product. What else is sort of like tomato soup? How about spaghetti sauce? That's essentially a tomato product. How about Campbell's tomato sauce? No, we don't think that the name Campbell's will extend well to spaghetti. Soup, yes, spaghetti. So instead, when they came up with their expanded product, they decided to not use the Campbell's name. They came up with Prego, a pretty good spaghetti sauce. All right, so you have to be cautious in how you try to use that brand equity. Licensing or trademark selling, sharing. The owner grants permission to another firm to use the brand name and the brand mark on its products. I want to start a t-shirt company and I'm going to have some kind of nice design on it, and I'm going to sell it from Marks Manufacturing. Who's rushing out to buy a Marks Manufacturing t-shirt? How much is it going to cost me to ramp up production and promotion to get you to really prefer Marks Manufacturing t-shirts? What are you talking about? No. So what if I put the Polo name, the Ralph Lauren name, on my t-shirt? People might buy my t-shirt. After all, it's Ralph Lauren. So the brand owner who licenses out their brand name gets the profits, part of the profits, from the licensing. And, of course, additional brand recognition, as long as you don't water it down by putting it on everything in sight. The other firm, the t-shirt manufacturer, the towel manufacturer, gets a greater probability of success because they're not unknown. People know the label. And obviously they have reduced marketing costs. They don't have to build up an image from nothing. So it works for both sides. Polo Ralph Lauren enters into global licensing agreement with Apparel Ventures to manufacture and distribute women and girls swimwear. They continue the march using up their brand name, licensing the brand name. For example, what if my t-shirt had Kent State University? This is actually a true Kent State University licensed product. You can't just walk around putting Kent's K on your bag. You actually have to license it from them. Here's one licensed from NBC Universal Family. What are these characters called? The Minions. Silliness. So that t-shirt manufacturer got a deal by licensing out the Minions character. So this is a somewhat longish, but I think interesting story that's going to bring together a lot of our product, but it's also going to talk about an interesting subtopic within product packaging. Packaging is really important in the store. How many times do you go to the place where you just recognize the package of the thing you want? Instant recognition if it's done right. So this talks about a new product coming out, a couple of entrepreneurs coming out with it, and one of the elements you'll see, there's a lot going on in here, is the packaging issue that they had to work with as they rolled out this new product idea.
Two male models, Jason Osborne and Jason Wright, hope to leave the glamour of fashion.
It was fun, but it was something that I was ready to get out of.
To make their own granola. Will they become the new rock stars of the business world?
We were just two guys in an apartment. My theory was, if the next guy can do it, I can do it, and I can do it better.
That I moved in, this guy was making this awesome granola that I could not get enough of. I was like, Jay, man, we got to take this to market. You got to sell this. We got to get it out there, you know. That's how the whole thing started.
It's just a compelling story. You got two former male models essentially sitting around the kitchen table, and it's the classic Eureka moment. They say, hey, we've got this granola. Why don't we try selling it? And they saw that it was popular among their friends. They found out it was a healthy product. It just started to take off.
It doesn't take long before both Jasons realize they have a potential product and partnership in the making. But Wright and Osborne aren't able to stop modeling yet because they use that money to fund making their granola. They aren't turning a profit, but they know they're onto something, which needs a name.
We have probably, I would say, 20, 25 different names that we could call it. But we also picked Feed, and we thought Feed described exactly what was in the bag.
Feed is a great name. I think simplicity is really important, especially on grocery shelves. We've got thousands of products to choose from.
Our belief is that what you put into your body determines your performance. You want to put the best ingredients possible. And so that concept of feeding, really came through.
The beginnings of a new brand are born. Feed Granola gets rave reviews from family and friends from all over the city, especially at the Wilhelmina Modeling Agency.
It was better than anything that I had tasted, and I think the reaction in the agency was pretty much the same. Everybody said, wow, this is terrific stuff. I think they had started to formulate this idea based on the feedback that they had, that maybe this might be a good idea for a business.
Wright and Osborne are two models who begin making Feed Granola in their West Village walk-up. Their grassroots style of marketing is paving the way to their success. Growing their business involves several steps: writing a business plan, getting a loan, and incorporating. But the missing link in their chain of success is more sophisticated packaging. Wright and Osborne are on the cusp of launching Feed nationally. They were using coffee bags and labels from Staples. Now it's time to give their brand a stronger identity.
Customers today, you probably got not even a second to get their attention. And so you want your brand big, and you want it something that they remember. And if not, you'll just get lost in the market.
Wright and Osborne's goal is to simplify their packaging and incorporate some of their own personalities. To do that, they consult a branding and identity expert.
Both Jasons had this great idea for a product, and they were having trouble developing the brand and just actually bringing it to market. This is what Jason Osborne presented to me. And you look at this and you want to find out what's working with this and what's not working with it. One of the problems that we had was that it's hard to read. It's a little busy. As an image, you're not quite sure what that is. Like, you know, it could be a bag of corn, bag of potatoes. We're not quite sure. I mean, it's legible, which is good, but you kind of want to up the professionalism of this a little bit. So we go from here to here. First, simple packaging. We keep true to the brown, like, which is also reminiscent of the burlap sack, which is great. We stylize the word feed, added some color to it.
We were trying to mimic a feedback, you know, a sack of grains, something that was recognizable by everyone. It was grains, it was hearty, it was organic. We knew it was for thoroughbreds. That's kind of what the concept of this package evolved from.
It very simply gets across the message of what they want to do. And it's good packaging, showcases the product really well, and has a lot of character to it.
But Osborne and Wright leave their fears behind when they're nominated for an award for Feed's packaging.
I got a call from both Jasons, and they were like, hey, we're a finalist for the best packaging. And it was really great because the packaging was it's almost like this breath of fresh air to a lot of the packaging that was going on at that time.
It gives them the exposure they hope for. A feeding frenzy ensues as foodies from all over the industry come over to get the scoop on Feed.
Whole Foods comes up to us, and they like the product. And
they're off to being a success. But the package is an important part of that product, important part of the brand, carrying that image forward, getting your attention on the shelf. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, kumquat flavored ding dongs. Let me try some of those. So it worked for them. It's an important part of that P of the marketing mix, the product. So there's a little bit of their backstory as well. And that ends our discussion on the product side of this element. But in addition to talking about products, we also talk about services. And this is chapter 12. Somewhere I think I got off on the exact page number on the lecture notes, but it's around page 173, if not exactly there, talking about managing services. So let's think about services marketing as opposed to just marketing a physical product. How many of you guys have been to Topgolf? Topgolf, it's fun, right? And what do you walk away from after you spent your money at Topgolf? What do you have? Maybe you took the card. They don't even have a card. It's all electronic. You don't have anything with you. So whatever you spent your money on was a service. You didn't buy a product, right? Topgolf expands offering with 10-hole course, new locations. In April 2022, the brand opened a 10-hole course with certain unique touches. So we're offering unique service features. The 10th hole allows players to track their first drive using Top Racer technology, which charts the ball's speed and trajectory. Electric bikes can be used in lieu of golf carts on this actual 10-hole golf course. So technology and marketing, enhancing the consumer experience. With 8 more locations slated to open in 2022 between the US and the UK, plus another one in Bangkok, the company is set to hit 86 physical actual golf course locations in 6 countries by the end of the year. So global services marketing. So what's the value here? A fun experience. You probably didn't play a golf course. You probably played the one with the stand where you hit the things into their field. Topgolf, a service. Hippo Insurance, a different form of service, says clients can stand up to problems. Hippo Insurance, which competes with Geico, Progressive, and Allstate, among others, is rolling out a new ad that features a homeowner staring down a really bad event. So here's competition in the marketplace, making an intangible service more tangible. Here is our catastrophe coming at us.
They got it.
Stand up to the next problem that shows up. Be insured with Hippo. Fuel the house power. So we're getting consumers' attention. We're using a little humor in advertising. That's their ad theme. Hippo is trying to pry business away from these established competitors. The company hopes to win clients by covering factors that other insurance don't cover, like upkeep, security, and repairs. For example, Hippo provides a sensor that chirps when water leaks under a kitchen sink so a plumber can be called in to prevent serious damage. So we're seeing marketplace competition in a service part and a unique selling proposition. So what's the value here of this service? Peace of mind. So in services marketing, we're not so much selling a physical product. We have other things in mind. So the company management themselves has to be sure that they understand what consumers want and value. Obviously, remember we did say, after all, marketing was the discovery and satisfaction of consumers' needs, wants, and values at a profit. They're going to get it up in the firm. So here they are going to set what we would call the service promise. Peace of mind could be a service promise. Fun experience could be a service promise. And we're going to communicate this out to consumers through, well, external marketing, promotion. The last P, the marketing mix we're going to talk about. However, to make this happen, we have to do it through our employees. You're not doing it through a product because you don't have a product. You only got a service. So here, services are often, not always, we'll see, delivered by people. So we're going to use internal marketing to be sure that our employees enable our service promise. Whatever you promise to the consumer, you better be sure your employees understand it and deliver it, yeah? Have you ever been to anywhere, a fast food franchise, restaurant, and the server is clearly not doing whatever the manager had hoped was going to happen, whatever it is? Hey, guys, you're delivering a service here. What are you doing? Also a product, but what are you doing? And then, between employees and customers, we have to be ensure our employees understand the service promise and then deliver that service promise through those service encounters. So that's what I'm referring to as we go on through this lecture as the service triangle. Company management interacting with customers and employees, employees interacting with management and customers. So the employees are going to deliver the service promise perhaps through interactive marketing. All right, services, why are we talking about them specially or separately? Well, services are a huge part of the U.S. economy. In dollars and in jobs. In 2022, the gross domestic product was $25.5 trillion. Services were $17.9 trillion of the gross domestic product. About 70% of the gross domestic product is services, not products, not manufactured goods. Around 131 million people work in services. Almost 80% of the people employed work in the service industries. Now, that's not just fast food stuff. That's up through financial investments, et cetera. Service sector added to the gross domestic product of the United States of America in 2022 by industry. At the top, finance, insurance, real estate. But we also see professional scientific and technical services, insurance, healthcare, wholesale trade, retail trade, information services, arts, entertainment, and recreation, down to, well, what we do here, educational services. After all, when you get done with me, what do you got? Never mind, a painting, okay. But you also have an education, we think, and I suppose a book, if you hold on to the book. Other than that, it's a service. Services are a larger part of the U.S. gross domestic product than goods. You can see way back when goods were closer to services, not so much today. So what are services? Services are the intangible activities or benefits that an organization provides to consumers in exchange for money or something else of value. Let's play with that word just for a minute. Intangible. Intangible. What do I mean when I say intangible or turn it around? What's tangible? Whichever way you want to deal with it. Tangible, intangible. Somebody help me out. Yeah.
Tangible is something you can't feel.
Yeah, so intangible can't see it, taste it, touch it, feel it, smell it very easily. Tangible, you can. Shovel, tangible. Insurance, intangible. Why do we see such an increase in the influence of services? Well, it helps organizations to focus on productivity and profits because customer service is one of the most vital yet overlooked paths to profitability. Your net profit will show the positive results of your customer service efforts. So perhaps we should focus on that. We say it's very hard to decrease your costs for products, but you can offer better customer service, and that allows you to increase sales. So be sure that for many customers, service is more important than price. Interesting. Customers also have perceptions of having too little time. You guys know about personal shoppers? You could have somebody buy your clothes for you. What, you're too busy? You couldn't go buy your own clothes? Yes, I'm too busy. Somebody else is going to buy my clothes for me, so I'm too busy. Personal shoppers like Stitch Fix. Jump out to Stitch Fix, sign up with them, and they will deliver your clothes picked by their stylist just for you. You take your style quiz. It'll tell you then what sort of product you want. Then you share your style goals, let your stylist know what you're looking for via notes, etc. They'll select 5 personalized pieces, send your fix box straight to your door, get your fix, ha ha ha. There's a $20 styling fee per fix order, which is then credited to whatever you keep out of the 5 items they send. Tell us what you like, we'll find what you love, and you don't have to bother with all that nasty, grubby shopping. Save your time. Takeout and home delivery, Grubhub, $2.1 billion revenue in 2021, DoorDash, $4.9 billion, Uber Eats, and more, $8.3 billion. You couldn't get off the couch and drive down to get your own sandwich. How many of you guys have used one of those delivery services? You guys tell me you don't have any money. You can't afford my packet. But you could pay for Uber Eats to deliver you a pizza or whatever. Okay, you're very busy people. So, poverty of time leads to things like personal shoppers, takeout, food at home delivery, house and lawn care. How many of you guys grew up pushing daddy's lawnmower? Anybody? Yeah, me too. I did too. And he didn't have a power model. That was the push model. Okay, fine. I carried that on because that's what my daddy did. So I was doing it at my place. So we moved out to the Hudson home that had a little bigger yard than my family home had. And one weekend I forgot to cut it, and the next weekend it was wet. So by the time I got to cut it, it took 8 hours for me to cut the lawn. I threw away the lawnmower, hired a guy in the neighborhood to cut the lawn. He's been cutting lawns ever since. He's now driving around in a Cadillac Espalade. He's doing fine for himself. And I don't have to cut my lawn. I'm too busy. I'm not spending 8 hours doing that. So customers' poverty of time drives up the need for services in today's economy. It affects virtually all industries. It affects them in terms of location, ATMs. We don't want to drive down to the bank. We don't want to interact with people. We want it convenient. In fact, where's the closest ATM to right here? About 50 feet outside the building. And then where's the next closest one? About 200 feet down in the student center. I can't be bothered walking the student center. I want one right here. Branch outlets, branch warehouses, just-in-time delivery. People want longer business hours. A fair number of years ago, I went to buy a car, a fairly expensive purchase in my household anyway. And so we went to buy a car. I was going in out on the weekend, and there's nobody selling cars. I mean, the places are closed. I said to them, the dealer, why are you closed on the weekend? That's when we go shopping. My wife, she works, I work. They said, well, our salespeople have families too. We give them the weekends off. I was not satisfied. Sorry. If I'm going to spend that much money, I want to do it on time when we can both be there together. These days, they are open, longer business hours. Better trained sales and service people. One-stop shopping. Improved customer service systems. I want to be able to talk to somebody in person and or on the phone and or online, give me that service. More information available. I want more information before the sale, during the sale, after the sale. Provide me that customer service. All of these services do add value to what you're providing to the consumer beyond just the issues of the product and the price of the product, and so can indeed enhance your brand image and your sales. There are 4 unique characteristics of sales. Marketers can't count above 4, right? We got the 4 P's and now we have the 4 I's. Maybe that's it. We're done. 1, 2, 3, 4. These are intangibility, inseparability, inconsistency, and the perishability of inventory. So let's take a look at these characteristics and think about it in terms of our little service triangle. So intangibility, we mentioned that's a key characteristic of a product, right? Services can't be seen, touched, tasted, felt, etc. Now, what's the trick here then? How are you going to communicate your thing to a consumer when they can't touch it, taste it, see it, feel it, smell it, etc.? It makes communication hard. How are you going to do that? Additionally, since they can't see it, taste it, touch it, they can't feel it. Setting the price can be difficult. I'm walking away with nothing with me. How much was that worth? How much was the experience worth? External communications are used to make these things tangible. So the company management, understanding what the consumer wants, setting the service promise, is going to communicate this stuff through external communications to make them tangible. Let's take the example of insurance. Again, what do you get once you buy insurance? I guess you get the paper that the insurance policy is printed on, but hopefully you're also getting something else. How do I make that more tangible? Well, for example, Allstate. When you think Allstate, what's their tagline? You're in good hands with Allstate. We're trying to make it tangible. We find other ways to make it tangible to the consumer.
I'm your cat. And ever since you brought me home that day, well, I've been plotting to destroy you, sizing you up, calculating your every move.
You think this is love?
This is a billion years of tiger DNA just ready to pounce. And if you got the wrong home insurance coverage, you could be coughing up the cash for this. So get Allstate. I'll be better protected from mayhem, like Meow.
I admit it. I love mayhem. And so we're trying to make the point to consumers, hey, this is what your insurance policy gives you peace of mind over. You don't have mayhem. Prudential, The Rock, Gibraltar, Travelers under the umbrella. So in all these cases, we're trying to find ways to make the intangible more tangible so consumers understand it. Okay, Larry. So in our case, as part of your education, we try to make you understand how important it is that we are accredited by AACSB. The Ambassador Crawford College of Business and Entrepreneurship has an accreditation by the top accreditation agency in the world. Inconsistency is an interesting problem when you're delivering a service. Who's taken operations management yet? Now? Ever? Anybody? Yeah. So did they talk about the issue of quality control in operation management? Is that something we've gotten to? Control the quality of the product as it comes out. So we can control, standardize a product as it goes through our line through using a series of control measures. And if the thing gets out of standard, gets out of spec, gets out of line, we stop the line, we fix the problem, and we get back into standards. Yeah? How do you do that with a service? How do you standardize it? Inconsistent delivery and quality for a service depends on the person performing it. Have you ever gone to your favorite hair place and they do a great job? Have you ever gone and they did a sucky job? What happened? It was fine last time. Look what you did to me. Service varies depending on the person delivering it. How do you control for that? They do try to train their people. They say everybody's trained to the same standard. Nah. You ever have a good professor? You ever have a bad professor? Why are you looking at me when you say that? You ever have a professor who's sometimes good and sometimes bad? What happens there? Same issue. We're delivering a service. How do you standardize us as professors delivering the service to you? So it becomes a problem. We try to minimize this in the service industry by selecting good employees, the server who will do right by you, the hairstylist who knows what they're doing and takes their training seriously, and by training them, of course, and by setting performance standards. Here's what I expect you to do in that interaction with the customer. And sometimes we run a secret chopper to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. We make it explicit so people know what those standards are. So internal marketing on the left-hand side of our triangle, of our standards and our expectations to our internal customers, to our employees. This is key in treating our employees right. They know what it is you expect from them, and you communicate it to them in your standards. Good pay, good working conditions, and appropriate motivations and incentives help to create satisfied employees, so they're motivated to do whatever they need to do. Satisfied employees are likely to deliver the service promise. dissatisfied. You don't care about them. Why should they care about your customers? Yeah, I don't care. So we're now doing internal marketing, make sure they understand our standards and our expectations, and we treat them right. That's part of what's going on here. Marriott International hotel chain operates over 6,500 properties in 107 countries and territories with over 20 brands globally. Those are some of their brands, and they want to be sure that their employees treat their hotel guests properly, whether you're at the low end of their hotel or the top end of their hotel. J.W. Bill Marriott said, if you take care of your employees, they will take care of your customers, and your business will take care of itself. So here we are, marketing our standards to our employees. At Marriott, a core value is that if they take care of their associates, the associates will take care of the guests will come back again and again. Marriott employees are offered discounts, talent development, international exposure, an open-door policy, cross-department opportunities, performance incentives, and rewards for high performance. And they are consistently on the best companies to work for, and they have success with their hotel guests. They're doing a good job of marketing internally. Inseparability. Again, quite different from a product, as all of our characteristics have been. If you were going to a hardware store, could I say, hey, could you pick up a shovel for me? Could you do that, hypothetically? Yeah? No, you couldn't. You could. So you could pick up a shovel for me. If I say, hey, you're going to get a haircut today. Could you get one for me? No, that doesn't work, right? So you see, we have inseparability. There's simultaneous consumption and production and consumption. So, unlike buying a shovel, consumers are a part of the service process. In almost every case, they have to be involved in the service. What's that mean? Well, that means they have to understand what's going on. We have to manage that interaction for customer satisfaction and educate consumers about the service process, about what their role is in it. One of the big complaints in the medical field, where we're providing health, is that patients won't do what they're told. And so they don't get better. Take your meds. They don't. Stop eating so much and sitting on the couch. Yeah, I do that. Get off the couch. They won't do that. Stop smoking. They won't do that. So it makes it hard to be successful in delivering health benefits when people won't do what they need to do. External marketing can be key here. We have to educate the consumers about our service features, whatever they are. Communicate any prerequisites that are necessary to do well on the test. You have to study. You have to be part of the process. Help consumers develop the right mindset and their expectations. These things help the consumer to better understand what that service promise is and their part in it. Marriott uses external advertising to educate their guests on its hotel's various offerings and what to expect. They do that in print. Most hotels train with booklets. We take ours to the valet to make them, very graceful. Marriott uses advertising to educate its guests on its offerings and what to expect using social media. So here we are on X. Marriott uses interactive marketing to educate its associates on how to interact with the guests. From the concierge to the front desk, housekeeping and maintenance, the focus is on improving the customer experience. The end result is a very high quality service delivery and consumer experience. Good job. Perishability. Interesting problem. What happens to your snow shovels? We're still on shovels, thank you. What happens to your snow shovels if you don't sell them this winter season? What can you do with them? You can inventory them, put them in a warehouse, and sell them next season. What happens to your airline seat if you don't sell it today? You can't inventory and sell it tomorrow. It's gone. So we have this issue of perishability. Services cannot be inventory. So it's hard to balance capacity and demand. It's very hard to return service for credit or exchange. Some places will have a guarantee, but it's sort of hard to do that. So you need to be able to manage demand in peak periods, so you have enough service there, you don't lose business. And then you have to find a way to use that service capacity in off periods. Easier to do with a product than it is with a service. Idle production capacity occurs when the service provider is available, but there's no demand. You're managing a city's transportation service, their bus service. So what you have to do is make sure there are buses available for when people need them. When do people in a big city need buses? To go to work and to get back from work. They need it in the morning, they need it in the afternoon. So you need a lot of buses, right? To do that, to satisfy them. What do they need at 11 in the morning? Not very much bus service there at work. So now what are you going to do? You got a boatload of buses sitting around costing you money. They aren't doing anything. What could you do? Think out of the box a little bit. What might you do with your bus at 11 a.m.? You might do what? They're still costing you money. They're not bringing in any revenue. Yeah, you aren't spending anything on the gas, sure. But they're sitting there now. Okay, you're saving some gas money. What could you do to bring in some money? Take people to lunch, as it were. So what if you developed a series of buses that would go around to retirement places and take people to shopping, take people to the zoo, take people to the mall, take people to on special trips, take people to Cleveland and bring them back. Back in time that you're still there for the rush hour, suddenly your buses are bringing in revenue. You're managing your idle capacity, which otherwise is just wasted. All those seats go to waste. Marriott's well aware of this. They developed a revenue management system to deal with perishability of inventory. They introduced revenue management to the lodging industry with an innovative one-yield revenue management system and related processes that have resulted in a 20% lift in revenue. You would take that from transient business. Marriott's revenue management systems and processes incorporate all aspects of hotel inventory, including rooms, meeting spaces, and catering opportunities. The one-yield software takes most of the guesswork out of setting room rates by providing recommendations to Marriott employees about what rates to offer at any given property on any given day to maximize using their rooms. Because once the room isn't sold, it's gone. You can't inventory it. So what can you do to bring people in? How much it's going to cost you for this thing to sit around varies quite a bit depending on what sort of business you're in. You run a real estate agency. So who is in your office if you're a real estate agency? You could guess, real estate agents. Do real estate agents get an hourly rate? Do you pay them hourly? Do you imagine? How do they get paid? They get paid commission, okay? So what's the cost of having them sit around if there's no sales going on? It's okay. I mean, it's not you aren't making any money, but it's not costing you anything. Likewise, in many hair salons, maybe they get paid a little bit, but they make most of their money off of commission and tips. So the cost there of having idle capacity is not very big. But let's move along here and think what it costs to have. So most salons have stylists on commission, so there's low carrying cost for them. Salons buy products such as shampoos for wholesale, then double the cost to sell them to their customers. These products represent one form of inventory carrying cost, but it's not massive. Take something like an auto repair center. How much equipment and supplies and oil and cleaning fluid, et cetera, goes into an auto repair center? Quite a bit. It's not like you just have a few desks in an office. If it's not doing business, it's beginning to cost money just sitting around, yeah? How about How about the cost of an amusement park? What might it cost to have, anybody been to Kennywood? Okay, Kennywood sitting around empty, there's no business. I don't know what it costs, but I bet it's a lot of money, right? Or Cedar Point, or a hotel. These things cost money. All the way out to, imagine what it costs to have an airline that isn't doing business. So these things are a problem, you have to be aware of them. We also need to think about the level of service we're going to provide in whatever we're doing. We talked previously about the core or primary product, that thing that the product has to do or it isn't the thing. Toothpaste that doesn't clean your teeth, not toothpaste, that's a core benefit. So the majority of a business or nonprofit organization in the service industry is at the core. For example, an investment services company provides the use of a brokerage account to buy and sell stocks. If you don't do that, then you're really not an investment service company. But there are different levels of service provided to you by different service investment companies. Let's think of Charles Schwab, sophisticated.
And can you explain to me why you recommend synthetic over cedar?
Superfood. Is that a real thing?
It's a great school, but is it the right one for her?
Is this really any better than the one you got last year?
If we consolidate suppliers, what's the savings there?
So should we go with the 467 horsepower?
Or is a 423 enough?
Good question.
You ask a lot of good questions.
I think we should move you into our new fund.
Sure. Okay.
But are you asking enough about how your wealth is managed? Wealth management at Charles Schwab.
Charles Schwab is going to bring you some service. It's going to give you good information. It's going to help you make your decisions properly. It's going to help you to invest. Versus somebody like E-Trade, which also provides some services
to you.
So,
yeah, sorry about last night.
I just don't understand why you didn't call.
Yeah, well, I was on E-Trade, you know, diversifying my portfolio, taking control like a wolf.
Right.
What's that? That's volatility in the market. Taking care of. Wolf style.
Oh, oh, oh.
And that milkaholic Lindsay wasn't over?
Lindsay?
Milka what?
Build a diversified portfolio at E-Trade.
Also an investment service company, but you sense a difference in service between the two companies at all? A little bit, sophisticated, etc. All right, so how much are you going to put into it? So the ancillary service are those expected or optional supplements to the primary purchase, for example, craft nights with live music at your bar, restaurant, whatever. Loyalty rewards program that rewards you for coming back that others don't offer to you. Travel insurance from your airline. Sure, you provide the air ticket, but how about insurance as well? Free appointments with your personal stylist could be an extra service. Yeah, they cut hair, but they also give you free appointments. Renter's insurance from your apartment management. Standing for something special. What does Tom stand for other than just shoes? Tom's? That was just Tom's? Really? Nada? Nothing? Nobody? My goodness gracious. Well, Tom's does, in addition to selling shoes, stand for something special. They have a social responsibility program. They improve lives. And they are attempting a global mental health initiative to spread good far and wide. Your purchase paved the way for Tom's to give 10 nonprofits in 10 different countries, $10,000 each, helping fund access to mental health resources for the millions of people who need them. 2023 10x10 nonprofit partners. So stand for something special in the minds of the consumers that will cause them to come to you. What sort of ancillary services are expected in the B2B world? Well, sure, you're going to deliver your product, but how about the service of being prompt with your delivery? I need you when I need you. That's part of what I'm buying. Favorable credit terms, sure, you're going to sell me the product, but how about offering me a good deal on it? Responsive, 24/7, if that's what you need, customer service and a help desk would be a nice service to have in addition to the product you're selling me. You're selling me a bunch of product, I gotta go keep track of it, see what's there and what style I have and what was sold out. What if you provide to me automatic inventory control? What a nice service, I would like that. 401k record keeping from your outsourced payroll company would be something that would be nice to have. additional services that make you stand out. Service, of course, is a value consumers and organizational buyers want. Yes, quality products, of course. At the right price, yes, yes, yes. With qualified sales and service personnel, a service side of what we're talking about, that offer the maximum benefits with the minimum effort, with low wait times. In other words, they demand value, and service is something that can give them that value that makes them think about you, like you, come back to you. Casual dining industry originally came out to offer value to consumers. That's faded away a little bit. Casual dining restaurants provide full service, alcoholic beverages, check averages from 10 to 23 bucks a person. They have competition from fast casual chains that are stealing the casual dining restaurant's customers. Fast casual chains have no waiters. They have higher quality food than do fast food restaurant chains. So places like Panera, Chipotle, Panda Express, Zaxby's, Five Guys are out there and, as a fast casual chain, are stealing from the casual dining restaurant market. That's all I had to say about that. Okay, fine. So competition rears its ugly face, and in that industry, you have to be careful to see what's going on. Value itself is an intangible concept often defined in terms of exceptional customer service, exceptional product quality, value-based prices. Different things to different segments. So the question is, what does your segment want when it comes to value? What part of that that's important to them is customer service? How much should you be providing? My voice is giving out. I got another big slide coming. I think awkwardly, because this is the end of the material for the midterm 2 exam, but wherever we are in the notes and the book is where we're going to call it for today. So, midterm 2 ends today. See you next time. Oh, yeah, also, mini test 10 ends today.